Everybody, we are in the car again. Just can't wait to be in the car again. In the car again. Da na 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 na. The car again. Card again. Driving home. So, I was looking for these topics to talk about in the car, because, you know, I can't look at anything, I can't remind myself, so I just have to use what's in my brain. And, I've got a doozy for you guys this time. Boy, have I got a doozy. I read three books by an author named Charles Hinton. Not to be confused with S.E. Hinton, who is, I don't know much about, but I suspect he's an author. Charles Hinton, I don't know if I would go that far. The books I read by Charles Hinton, the first one was called Time Traveling Exist. Do not worry, there's no, like, false advertising there. It is definitely about a time-traveling racist. No doubt about it. And then I read two in the series of Agent Cold Beer on Assignment. Both of these books were listed on Amazon as being book two in the series. However, one of them was just Agent Cold Beer on Assignment, and the other one was Agent Cold Beer on Assignment in Japan. And I figured, well, a normal person certainly wouldn't start with Japan. Would Charles Hinton start with Agent Cold Beer in Japan? It's entirely possible. But, you know, all I can do is try and guess and then second guess myself and say, nah, he wouldn't, you know, I could do it over and over and never come to a conclusion. Now, here's how I discovered our friend Chuck. I did a program at work with a coworker, and we made a bet. And the loser of this bet had to read a Kindle book on Amazon of the other person's choosing. So I lost and therefore had to read a book that my friend selected. And she picked this book called The Bench Made Out of Green Recycled Plastic, which I read, and it was basically garbage. I mean, you could tell the person who wrote it had a grasp of English and knew sort of what they were doing. But also, it was like one of those, it's like one of those stories where someone's like, I really like Kafka. I really like Edgar Allan Poe. But if you could take out any concrete imagery whatsoever. So it's basically, you know what I like to do is write a story where it's like you're on LSD and you're tumbling down a dark pit and you don't know which way is up. Which, if that was the person's goal, they succeeded 100%. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. There was, I swear to God, from what I understood, now, this book stretched the limits of what we call the unreliable narrator. Because not only was the narrator unreliable, but he was like, okay, to me an unreliable narrator is like this. You have a Huckleberry Finn or something who you're like, well, I don't know if I believe this kid. Like, maybe he's telling tall tales or stretching the truth or making himself look like the good guy when I know that that's probably not the case, right? This is the kind of unreliable narrator where you're like, I'm not sure which planet this guy is on. Like, this guy doesn't seem to be speaking a language that I fully understand. Yeah, I have this writing teacher, and he always says, like, the hardest kind of story to tell is a story about a guy who's in a room by himself going slowly going crazy. And the reason is you're like, well, I have no context. I don't know as the reader what's real and what isn't. What's crazy and what's not. And that's what this book totally was. It's a guy going crazy in his own mind by himself. And you have no context. And so you're like, well, is this evil butterfly that's telling him to kill people real or not real? Is there actually some kind of plague that's wiped people out or not? I don't know. It seemed like there was something about his stepdad abusing him, but again, real or not real, I do not know. And it just kind of goes on and on, like everything. I was like, I don't know. Who the fuck knows? Who can tell? Who can even tell? So the bench made out of green recycled plastic, I mean, it was readable, but I would not have finished it had I not been forced to by a bet. Now, here's the thing. When I was selecting, because we pre-selected our books for the other person to read, because that's a fun part of the little presentation, right? Because you're like, well, if I win, I'm gonna make my friend read this, and if she wins, I'm gonna have to read that. So the ones I found, I picked for her Agent Cold Beer on assignment in Japan, because it was like the second in the series, and I was like, well, I don't know. I think you could probably start the second in the series and fully get it. Boy, was I wrong, but we'll get there. Excuse me. And so, when I was looking for the books, though, I stumbled across this fella, Charles Hinton. The first book of his that I saw was, I think, called The Skunk Woman, or just Skunk Woman, or something like that. It's kind of your basic Superman story, except instead of, being a man from Krypton who gets superpowers, it's a skunk woman from a planet called Garbage, who her parents sent her to Earth in a spaceship that just so happens to look exactly like a toilet, and then she's adopted upon arriving on Earth. Very stupid. And you could read this in the preview. Oh, here's the other thing about Charles Hinton, by the way. If you want to just go experience this for yourself, we're not talking about a big commitment here. These are like 6 or 7 pages long. They cost $1 unless you've got that Kindle Direct or Kindle whatever, and then they're free. So if you want to, read ahead and then come back and listen. We're going to talk about the time-traveling racist, the other ones, the Agent Cold Beers on assignment, both books in that series, if we can call it a series. All right. So I came across Skunk Woman. There was another one called, like, Dino Wars. And these have the worst covers you've ever seen. Just look up, even if you're not going to read them, I highly encourage you to look them up. Agent Cold Beer doesn't look that bad. The Time Traveling Racist is, like, real plain, but it's not fucking offensive. Dino Wars, ridiculous. Could be Dinosaur Wars. Who knows, man? So, you know, I get home, and I was like, because I really actually wanted to make my friend read The Time-Traveling Racist, because I was like, well, this sounds pretty good, and the first page sets it up like this. You have, like, a college professor, and he thinks, like, boy, I miss the good old days that I've never experienced, where a white guy like me was just a plantation owner. That seems like a pretty cherry gig, right? So what he does is he builds a time machine to go back in time and change the course of the Confederate, the War of Northern Aggression. That's the summary of the book. And that's the one I wanted her to read because I was like, this is ridiculous and needs to be experienced by more people. Oh, man. Can I just yell about Colorado and yell at Colorado for a second? What the fuck with the highways, Colorado? I cannot drive more than an hour without getting in, like, 40 minutes of stop-and-go traffic. It is impossible. Where is everyone going? What is everyone doing? You know what I mean? Why does this always happen? And it's always the same thing. You get up there, there's, like, 2 cars that have been fender-bendered just a little bit, and you're like, okay, well, good thing we all fucking stopped to take a look at that. I'm happy. Okay, time traveling racist. So this professor is basically like, man, I'm tired of these blacks. That's what he, those are like his exact words, by the way. And so he's like, I'm going to build a time machine and I'm going to go back in time because then I can just be a slave owner. And that sounds good. You know, I'll just be sitting on the porch drinking a mint julep. So he buys a tractor. Now at this point in the story, the perspective switches to his neighbors who are watching, and the wife is like obviously very nosy and involved in what this guy's professor guy's doing, and she's like, you know, what do you think he's doing with that tractor? And the husband's like, I don't fucking know. Who gives a shit? And she's like, he's doing something with that tractor, and he's just like, Jesus Christ, who cares? And then it says, like, you know, 1 week later, and it's like, he's still working on that tractor. I think he's doing something. And the husband's like, shut the fuck up. And then it says, you know, 3 months later, and she's like, I think he's finished doing whatever he was doing on that tractor. And the husband's like, fine, I will go over and see what's going on with the tractor. Which I enjoyed, because I was like, this guy is building a time machine out of a tractor, which, first of all, a tractor, that's the base for your time machine, huh? Interesting choice. I would argue that most people wouldn't consider a tractor to be the number one possibility. However, I would also say no one successfully invented time travel yet. So maybe it is a good choice. You know, maybe part of the problem is no one's gone tractor. And yeah, maybe that's why DeLorean worked. Because you're like, well, okay, sometimes you try and let a car in and they just don't go. Maybe no one has made it work because, you know, the DeLorean, they're like, well, what's the most unlikely car to go to the future? And they're like, how about that? What's that one with the fucking gull wing doors? And they're like, oh yeah, DeLorean. Yes. Let's make one of those, man. Let's try it. What's going to happen? Who knows? So they make the DeLorean mobile or whatever. And it works, right? They go back in time. Gotta go back in time. Or forward, back, and then forward to the future. Return to the Future would have been the more proper name for that movie. Back to the Future is just confusing. So the tractor's complete. The neighbor goes over and he's like, what are you doing here? And the professor's like, I'll tell you a secret, but don't tell anyone, okay? And the neighbor's like, sure, I don't care. I just want you to know. My wife is real curious. I'm basically, you could tell me you just are taking a tractor apart. I don't give a fuck. I'm just coming over here to satisfy my wife. That doesn't really happen in this story, but that's my interpretation. And the guy is like, the professor is like, I made a time machine out of this tractor. You want to give it a whirl? And this neighbor's like, yeah, sure. So they get in the tractor. They go 3 days into the future. Now, why they go into the future instead of the past, I do not know. And so they're in the future, and, you know, it's 3 fucking days in the future. The only difference is there's, like, a BMW parked on their block. And this neighbor guy is like, well, how do I know it's the future? And then the professor's like, check out this newspaper. And, you know, it's the future. And the newspaper says the winning lotto numbers. And then the professor is like, you didn't see that, right? And the guy's like, no. He's like, good, because if you did, forget it, because you'll change the past or the future, or I don't know. You'll do something wrong. I don't really know how much harm there is in going to the future, seeing it, and then going back and to when you left, and then, like, winning the lottery. Like, does that damage a time? This does not get into the depth of time travel at all. So they go back to regular time, and the guy goes next door, and he's like, well, it's a fucking time machine. And the wife is like, what? So then the professor is, you know, milling around, and then, of course, his neighbor wins the lottery the next day. And he goes to the neighbor's house, and he's like, you gotta give me half the money, or else, I don't know. I don't know what he was going to do. He didn't really threaten him specifically enough, which I was like, you could just go back in time to before you took him in the time machine and not take him in the time machine, right? But But he's like, neighbor, you got to give me half the money or else you'll get in trouble. And so the neighbor's like, okay. So then the professor's like, now I'm set. He goes, this is the only logical step of this entire story, is that he goes to a place and converts the money into gold bullion, which I'm like, all right, well, that might be usable if he takes it to the past. And he gets in his time machine to leave, and, you know, he's looking around the neighborhood, and he's like, man, there's a lot of black people in this neighborhood. I never noticed this. And he's like, well, I'm really looking for... Oh, and he had this great, super racist burn. So he said, there's a lot of black people moving into this neighborhood. Well, where I'm going, the only thing they'll be moving is cotton. Because I guess they're working in a cotton field. And I was like, I guess he was by himself when he said that, you know, because I was like, I don't know, save that for a private moment. But I guess he was by himself. In the universe of this book, he doesn't know he's being recorded. So the only thing they'll be moving is cotton, which I was like, yeah, it's a 5. Not great. I mean, good because you went so far. You know, sometimes someone does a burn and you're like, you really had to set up a lot to really knock that one down. Like, that was a hard won burn, and it was a 5, but you fought for every inch. You fought for every digit in that 5. It was one of those. And so then he goes to the past. When he gets there, however, he's immediately enslaved, and he's like, what's going on? And he notices all the black people are well-dressed, and the whites are working in the fields. And who comes, lo and behold, but his old neighbor, the one he took to the past. Now, here's a big fucking flaw in this book. They didn't specify that the neighbor was a black guy until this point. So I didn't know the neighbor was black and that he was, you know, this white racist was revealing his secret weapon to a black guy the whole time, who then used it to go back, and he and his wife go to the super far past. And somehow, he didn't really say, but somehow went far enough into the past that now basically everything is the same except white people are enslaved and black people are not. Which is like, well, what fucking year did you go back to? Like, how far did you go? I don't understand. How did this happen? Like, he went back and then changed people, like, their continental location or something? I don't know. He didn't get into the nitty-gritty. I feel like he was probably time-warping around for 50 years our time. You know, he's just endlessly tortured, trapped in time in order to pull this basically what consists of a big prank on his neighbor. So he shows up and he's like, joke's on you. White people are the slaves now. And the white guy is like, oh, fuck. And then he says, well, so what? The Civil War will happen soon and I'll be free. And the black guy is like, well, I'm gonna do stuff and make sure the Civil War never happens, so you'll be enslaved forever. And it's like, no! And that's the end. No. I take that back. One more thing happens. Smash cut to the professor's driveway in the current time. Newspaper hits the front porch and it says, first white Secretary of State elected. Which, that's the end beat, and it pissed me off because I was like, you better off going either bigger or smaller. First white president elected. Why would you not do president? Why would you do Secretary of State? Who cares? Someone asks me, like, has there ever been a blank Secretary of State? I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea. For all I know, every Secretary of State's been white. I do not know. Or you could have gone smaller and been like, first white governor of Alabama. And I'd be like, aha, I see what happened here. Reversal. Something like that would have been good. But he went Secretary of State just because. Here's what I love about these books. Basically, everything that you're told about storytelling is kind of thrown out the window, which means that everything is a surprise. I mean, I am consistently surprised by these books. I don't have expectations, and that's probably part of it. Or my expectations are exceedingly low. And then when they're met, I'm like, oh my God, and I start clapping. So, there you go. That's what that does for us. Let's move on to book two. Agent Cold Beer on assignment. Now, Agent Cold Beer, that is a man whose name, first name Cold, last name Beer. It's not like a, not a clever code name or something. This is not a trick. That is the guy's fucking name. Like, his parents, he was born, and his parents were like, what should we call him? Cold. What about his last name? Beer. How about Beer? And an eye doctor, Dr. Beer. And people are like, are you serious? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I'm serious. And then I feel bad for her, because I'm like, people give me shit for having a doctor named Dr. Beer. I can only imagine being Dr. Beer. Hell, your entire life, people are like, really, your last name's Beer? B-E-E-R? So if she named her son Cold Beer, he would, it'd be a tough life, but hey, maybe that's what molds him into one of the world's finest secret agents. I know it, when I say that, you're probably picturing, like, Tom Cruise from Mission Impossible. We'll stop that immediately, because we get a very rich description of Cold Beer, which is he is 300 pounds of fat and muscle. Which is, you know, kind of the composition of most people, right? I mean, fat and muscle. The book does specify that he's 50-50, exactly. Half fat, half muscle, which I'm like, that's pretty fat. 50% body fat is not a good ratio. That is not a desirable... In fact, that's gotta be in the obese spectrum, right? Anyhow, so Agent Cold Beer, goes and gets his newest assignment. And his new assignment is to take down a criminal known as Jackknife Joe. Who is Jackknife Joe, you're wondering? Well, he owns a bar where every month he has a drinking contest. A beer drinking contest. And the winner of the contest wins $1,000 and free drinks at the bar for a month. And it's kind of set up like, can you believe this fucking scheme this guy has set up? Because all he does is he wins his own beer drinking contest every month and then drinks for free, and he does pocket the $1,000 from his own bar. So he could do that. He could have this beer drinking contest, or he could just not have this beer drinking contest, open the fucking register, take out $1,000, and if anyone complained, he would say, hi, I'm Jackknife Joe. I don't know if we've met. I own this bar. I do what the fuck I want. But no. And here's the other thing, though. Here's the real crime. Jackknife Joe also runs some kind of beer distribution business. Like, he sells his own beer. And what he does is he goes from place to place roughing up liquor store owners who don't carry his beer. Until they do, or, you know, convenience store owners or whatever. And if they have any other rival beers, you know, he sends thugs to beat the shit out of them, they stock his beer, and then everything's good. Which is, you know, fucking a lot of effort, but I don't know. I went on this beer tour one time, and they were basically explaining that, like, the thing that separates big breweries from small is the distribution. There's all these laws about the distribution, and, you know, there's like two or three companies that own all the distribution. That's why all of a sudden you don't see this kind of beer everywhere, and then all of a sudden you do. It's because, you know, you see Goose Island nowhere, and then it gets bought by Budweiser, basically, and then they distribute it, and then it's fucking everywhere. And, you know, it's like a celebratory thing when, like, a Budweiser buys something, because they're like, everyone's going to get our beer. But then also you're like, God damn, like, three fucking companies own all the beer. So in a way, this guy is kind of a hipster DIY homemade rebel, which I respect in a fashion. But I don't understand his scheme, and I don't like that his name is Jackknife Joe instead of Jackknife Jack, or just Jackknife. This guy is fucking Cold Beer. You could be Jackknife. So Cold Beer goes to his boss, who is a black lady living in the ghettos of Philadelphia. And it's not clear if she's like undercover there or if she just fucking lives there. And it's not clear who she's getting assignments from, but she has his assignment, which is he's the only Agent Cold Beer, only one who's going to be able to drink enough beer to get close to Jackknife Joe and then bring him down. So his boss is like, do that. And he says, all right. And she's like, before you leave, go and see Shorty. He's got some stuff for you. And Shorty is the Q of this world. You know, Q in James Bond, he's like, here's a laser pen. Here's a car that drives itself. Here's something that shoots a missile. There's always something that shoots a missile. So he goes to see Shorty. He and Shorty have this cute little interaction where Agent Coldbeer is like saying how Shorty used to fix his truck. And now he does this. And he's like, ah, I wish you were still fixing my truck. No one else does it right. And Shorty's like, yeah, well, this is a lot fucking better for me than working on goddamn cars all day, you asshole. So here are the items that Agent Cold Beer gets from Shorty. Item the first, a knife that shoots bullets. Yes. A knife that you hold the blade, which is not sharp, it just appears sharp, I guess, and then it shoots bullets out of the handle. All right, sounds pretty useful. Next we have bulletproof denim jacket. That's exactly what it sounds like. And Agent Coldbeer is like, I'll take four. You know, and he's like, I'll take four. Blue, black, red, and white. So he's got a white bulletproof jean jacket. That sounds good. Really shaping up here. And then, a recording cigar. What is a recording cigar, you might ask? Well, it's a recorder cleverly hidden inside of a cigar in such a way that when you light the cigar, it starts the recording. And they're careful, the writer is careful to point out that, you know, if you were to burn the cigar down too far, it won't let it burn the recorder. It'll stop halfway. I was telling this to my partner. I was basically torturing her with this. I made dinner last night. And I was like, if you're going to eat dinner, then you have to come and listen to me talk about these books because they're fucking crazy. And she's like, I don't want to hear about that. And I was like, well, I'm only making you food if you come and listen. And she was like, God damn it. So she had to listen to this. And at that part, she was like, that was the part that like put her over the edge. Honestly, the recording cigar was what was like a bridge too far for her. She was like, okay. So then what happens? He just puts it in his pocket after he's done? No one's going to say anything when he just puts a lit cigar in his pocket? And I was like, I don't know. If you can't get past this, we're going to have problems. Because it gets way fucking worse. What else? He had another device. Ah, of course. Beer can grenade. This is a grenade disguised as an ordinary beer can. And when you click open the top, you have 1 second until it blows. Which seems like a really short amount of time to me. One thousand and then it blows? Like, you couldn't even throw it that far. I feel like I can, when I throw something, it's got more hang time than 1 second. Also unclear if it, like, had beer in it or anything. I don't know. And so he's like, give me a 6-pack of grenade beers. And then off to the races. So, you know, we have all this build up to this beer drinking contest. This is a big thing. And it lasts for 2 sentences. And of course, Agent Cold Beer wins. And I guess the way this beer contest works is you start chugging beer and you just keep drinking until, you know, the last person is drinking. I said that horribly. When you stop drinking, you're out. And then the last person drinking wins. So this could go on forever. So, you know, a bunch of people drop out and it's Cold Beer versus Jackknife Joe. Cold Beer wins. And then that's that. Meanwhile, there was I forgot to mention this pack of 4 thugs that tried to beat up Agent Cold Beer. And then he like basically just kung fu beat the shit out of him. Which didn't seem to happen for any reason other than for us to know, like, oh, Agent Cold Beer is a fat fuck who can beat people up really good somehow. And so these thugs go to Agent Cold Beer's trailer, where he lives, and they're going to wait for him, you know, and pounce when he gets home and kill him, I guess, or beat him up. So they're sitting around his trailer, and one of them is like, see if there's anything in the fridge while we're just hanging out, whatever, and grabs a beer, opens it, and it's a beer grenade, so it, combined with the other beer grenades, blows up the entire trailer. So Agent Coldbeard's headed home in his truck with a waitress he picked up who was very impressed with the fact that he drank an insane amount of beer. She's like, ooh, you seem insane. And I was, you know, they were saying he drank like gallons of beer. And I was thinking, even if you weigh 300 pounds, how much beer can you drink before you can't fucking even walk straight or drive home? But I guess he was fine. They get in his truck and go to his house. And it's completely engulfed in flame. And Coldbeard's like, oh, crap, the grenades. Because I guess as a reader, just in case you didn't pick up on the fact that he had these beer grenades, and about 10 words later, someone blew themselves up with a beer. In case you didn't put that together, Agent Coldbeard says, oh, my God, the grenades. And he's like, oh, I hope none of my friends had stopped by and just helped themselves to a beer, which I was like, well, fuck them. They got what they deserved. And just go in someone's trailer house and just like, oh, I'll just have a beer and sit here. But then the waitress is so horned because, again, he drank a lot of beer, that she's like, well, let's have sex in the truck. And he's like, all right. And he starts driving off to some woods or whatever. And she's like, no, right here. And he's like, right here, like where the cops are and stuff. And she's like, fuck yeah. So then they bang in the back of the truck. And they're having sex, and the cop, you know, walks, I presume he walks over from about 5 feet away and starts whacking Coldbeard on the ass with his nightstick and says, like, hey, get off of that lady, you fat bastard. And then Agent Coldbeard gets up and beats them up, I guess, naked with a boner, apparently. So then we go back to Jackknife Joe. And Jackknife Joe is, like, pissed off at Coldbeard because he's taken his $1,000 and now he's drinking all his free drinks. And he's like telling his thugs, boys, I want you to take this Coldbeard guy on assignment with you. You're going to go rough up this Korean liquor store owner. Now here's what you're going to do. You're going to put a gun in Coldbeard's hand and a gun in that guy's hand, and you're going to shoot both of them, and then it'll look like they just had a shootout and they both died. Pretty good plan. And so they go out to the liquor store, and they're like, we're going to kill you. And for some reason, Coldbeard's like, lights his cigar to record them saying, like, we're going to shoot you and this other guy, and then make it look like an accident. I guess he, it's like one of these, you know how in the movies, they always have some weird way to collect evidence of something, but then they, like, 9 times out of 10 just blow up the evidence, or, you know, it's like, I feel like every Die Hard movie, I think Die Hard with a Vengeance ended that way 2 different times. Like, I think there was the time where he blows up the ship that's full of gold or whatever, or iron, scrap iron, I guess. And then there's also the part where he, like, blows up the helicopter. That's in that one, right? He shoots down that helicopter, and then, like, there's just flaming money raining from the sky. I'm just like, you really destroyed the evidence on this one twice, didn't you? So anyway, he collects this audio evidence for no fucking reason. They already know that Jackknife Joe needs to go down, right? I mean, his boss told him to do it. I don't think, she didn't say, like, make sure he's actually doing something bad. But hey, Agent Coldbeard's a pro, so he's going to do it. And so then they're going to kill him, and Agent Coldbeard cleverly somehow has another beer grenade, I think in his pocket or something. So he has his last beer grenade. He opens the beer, throws it at them, and he, like, shoves this Korean guy out of the way, and they survive, and the other guys are dead. So then Coldbeard goes back to Jackknife Joe's and is like, you motherfucker. And Jackknife Joe says, I'm going to make you a deal. Here's a contract that says if you fight me in a knife fight, because, you know, Jackknife Joe is known for his knife skills. That's why he's Jackknife Joe. If you fight me in a knife fight, we'll have a fight, and the winner wins my bar and all my liquor business and all this shit, and the loser gets killed in the knife fight. And Cold Beer says, "I don't trust you. Let me see that contract." Looks it over briefly and then says, "Okay, sounds good." And so they go to have the knife fight. Of course, then Agent Cold Beer shoots Jackknife Joe with his knife that shoots bullets. And he dies. Agent Cold Beer takes over the bar and he renames it. It was like a country place or something. And he renames it Cold Beer's Rock Place. So not like Rock Bar, Rock-a-Doodle-Doo or something. Rock Place. You know, it's like a place and they have rock there. What else do you need to know? And then he goes back to his boss, who's in the projects, and she's like, "Nice work on that one, Cold Beer." And then she's like, "I have your next assignment." And he says, "What is it?" And she's like, "Babysitting my 9 kids while I go on vacation." And Cold Beer is like, I what? And says, you know, "Hey, there's some things that even secret agents won't do," and then leaves. And that's the end of the story. A beautiful ending to a well-told tale. "There's some things even secret agents won't do." That was my favorite part, because it was exactly like, it was basically Jackie Chan's career arc, where it's like, now he's Mr. Nanny or whatever that was. Very good. Beautifully put together, wonderfully laid out. Agent Cold Beer on assignment. So that's 2 books. That brings us to book 3, Agent Cold Beer on Assignment in Japan. And brings me to my grand theory about Charles Hinton as an author. This is good, you guys. Get ready. Because I have an actual question and proposal and idea. So here's what happens. Agent Cold Beer gets a new assignment and goes to Japan for no apparent reason. The book starts very strong because he parachutes out of a plane with a giant sword. It's like a Conan-style sword. Every time Cold Beer shows up in the story, someone or the narrator is commenting on, like, "Jesus Christ, that sword is really big. Do you know how to use it?" And he's always like, "Yeah, I watched Conan like 500 times. I know how to use a big sword." And then they're just like, "Well, okay, I guess he knows." So he uses this sword to, he's supposed to fight this guy who's known as the Bad Temper Ninja. Okay? Who's the Bad Temper Ninja, you might ask? I have no real fucking idea, to be honest. But he's a ninja who has apparently done something wrong. He trains a bunch of ninja students. And when the ninja students do something he doesn't like, he breaks their hand or their foot. Because he's just fucking an evil bastard, I guess. So Agent Cold Beer is on assignment to go kill this guy, and he's brought over to Japan by this Japanese businessman. Now here's where the story really lags, because nothing happens. It's just like Agent Cold Beer and this businessman, they like go to a massage parlor that's also a whorehouse. They go, you know, Agent Cold Beer is like living at this millionaire's house for some reason. You have this Japanese billionaire, and they bring in Agent Cold Beer to like fight some guys to kill somebody. They're like, "This is a dangerous agent who's going to kill somebody. I guess he'll just stay at my house, like with my family." Because his wife and Agent Cold Beer do not get along. The wife comes home and Agent Cold Beer has eaten a bunch of fried chicken and is watching porno with no sound on. And she's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Watching porno." And she's like, "Oh, God, it's gross." And, you know, classic odd couple. So in the middle of being at this whorehouse where Agent Cold Beer has a fairly lengthy discussion about how much prostitution costs in the United States versus Japan that is totally pointless and unnecessary, Bad Temper Ninja breaks in and is like, "All right, let's fight." Or no, I'm sorry. His henchman breaks in and Agent Cold Beer kicks his ass and kills him. And then Bad Temper Ninja shows up and they have a fight. Now so they square off and Bad Temper Ninja has like a, you know, samurai sword or whatever. And Agent Cold Beer's got his giant Conan sword. So they square off. They're getting ready to fight. And, then what happens, I should have known, is Agent Coldbeer flips the sword around, and it turns out it's a shotgun disguised as a a sword, and he shoots the guy with it and blows away Bad Temper Ninja. He's dead. Everyone's like, "God damn, Agent Coldbeer, you're a genius." He's like, "I know. No one had ever thought before, like, oh, we could just shoot this other guy. Well, he's a ninja, and it's like 2015. I guess we could just shoot him with a gun." But fine. Agent Coldbeer figured out how to do it. So he shot him. The Japanese businessman is like, "I am forever in your debt," and puts him on his plane to go home, his private plane, back to the United States, along with his wife and these two, you know, pilots. And he's like, "Anything you want." So Agent Coldbeer's version of anything he wants is he's on this plane, and he has a naked stewardess who's in high heels serving him chicken nuggets, peanuts, and beer while he watches porno on the TV with no sound. And then, but the best part is the porno's not on yet. Agent Coldbeer is sitting in this private plane, apparently right next to the Japanese businessman's wife, because she's like, "This is horrible. I hate it so much." And he's like, "It's going to get worse." And then he turns on the porno, and she's like, "Oh, my God." Because that's... they managed to fit in a porno callback within a story that's only 6 or 7 pages. So kudos to that. So then the pilots are like, "We're 300 pounds overweight," and they're like, or 250. They're like, "Let's throw Agent Coldbeer over the side." He parachuted into Japan. "We'll just give him a parachute and tell him to jump." And Agent Coldbeer's like, "Are you fucking nuts? We're over the ocean." And they say, like, "Well, how about you just do it?" So then he, like, promptly picks up the Japanese guys and throws them out, and also throws the wife out. Probably unnecessary. I'm going to assume that the two Japanese guys together were easy a buck 25. Also, I don't know a lot about airplanes, but here's what I do know. Heaviest to take off, right? Because they have all the fuel, and then they're lighter when they land because they don't have all this fucking fuel. They burn it on the way. So if they managed to take off and they were flying, they should probably be fine. I don't know how they would know at that point. They're like, we're a very small amount of weight overweight. Now that we're over the ocean, away from Japan, halfway between Japan and the United States. So Agent Coldbeer throws the wife out and throws a parachute after her and is like, "You forgot your chute," which is like the real action movie moment of like, "Fuck you." And then it turns out the Japanese businessman was hoping that Agent Coldbeer would kill his wife because he's just like, "Whatever, she's a shrew, I don't like her." And also he didn't really care for those two pilots, so collateral damage, that's fine. And And Agent Coldbeer is like, "Hey, how did you hear about me anyway? Like, why me? Why did you have me come over?" And the Japanese guy is like, "I have a Korean friend who has a store in America, and he says you saved his life." And so you're like, "Oh, see, now we're tied into the first book." The end. So there you go. That's the Agent Coldbeer trilogy. Now, here's what's interesting about the Japanese one to me. Because I kind of was like, what's the point of these books? These are dumb, obviously, whatever. But I had this theory, right? And it goes a little something like this. You know how you'll be watching Modern Family, and like season 3 or 4, maybe the end of season 2 if the show's going well, they do the trip to Hawaii episode. They're like, "Hey, family, we're going to Hawaii." And as a viewer of the show, and then they go and they learn a lesson about family togetherness that you're like, I don't feel like they could have learned that in Indiana or fucking whatever. But you know, as a viewer of TV, as someone who's seen TV before, you're like, well, I know what's going on here. They just fucking do that because then everyone making the show gets to go to Hawaii. They're like, oh, free Hawaii trip? Yes, I will do one of those. I'll take one. So then they go to Hawaii. I have this theory that Charles Hinton is not a writer, doesn't consider himself a writer, doesn't give a fuck about selling ebooks, but what he is like some rich dude who's not ridiculously rich, but, you know, well off enough to take a long trip to Japan and really live it up. And then what he said was like, wait a second. What if I say that I'm a self-published author, and then whatever trips I take, I'm sitting in the fucking airport waiting for the plane, I got my iPad, I bang out like 2,000 words in about 45 minutes about just this Agent Cold Beer, and thereby justify the trip that I've taken as a business expense, right? I didn't go for... That was a business expense. I write it all off on my taxes. End of discussion. The first book, you know, Agent Cold Beer's in Philadelphia, and they have like a brief mentioning of cheesesteak at the beginning and the end. And it has no real effect on the story. But there you go. So maybe what this was is Charles Hinton tried this and was like, let's start small. Let's start Philadelphia, right? And go from there. Because here's what I was thinking when I was thinking about this. I was like, hey, man, if like fucking John Grisham took a trip to Japan and then he wrote a novel about Japan and he's like, well, whatever. I had to go to Japan. I had to go to a fucking whorehouse to find out what that's like so I could write about it in my book. The Japan Maker. The Japanament. Whatever it's called. He's like, I gotta go, so I know. I wanna know. I gotta go. So he goes to Japan and then writes it off. And then Charles Hinton is like, well, fuck that. This is 2015. I'm in the Kindle world now. Why do just the John Grishams of the world get to do it? Why not the Charles Hintons of the world? So then he says, I'm going to just go to fucking Japan, crank out a few words on the airport when I'm hungover as shit and full of whatever whores are full of in Japan. And, then save my fucking receipts and write them off, baby. There we go. And then I honestly thought of that and was like, is that possible? Like, that might be possible. Do you think it's possible to do that if you're like, I'm a self-published author. You can see my books on Kindle. Had I not gone to Japan, I wouldn't have been able to authentically talk about the experience. Now, these books are short and they suck. But is like the IRS in the business of evaluating the effectiveness of books or like the, you know, the narrative prose style? It doesn't seem like that's their jam. It doesn't seem like there's anyone at the IRS who's like, well, the prose is very weak, for starters. And furthermore, the character development doesn't really go anywhere. I don't think we can justify it because... You can't say a business expense isn't a business expense just because the end product is shit, right? Can you? I don't know. Maybe you can. And, you know, something like writing a book, it's so subjective. It's like, well, fuck, you don't know. Maybe that took him 5 goddamn hours. You know what I mean? Maybe that was a toil, a slog for him to write that thing. He probably spent longer on it than James Patterson does, right? That guy just fucking... Here's how long he spends on a book. It's about a fucking lady who works at a morgue. And she finds leprechaun's gold in a guy's sternum. And sailboat happens. Do that. Do that one. Leprechaun, sailboat, gold sternum. Do that one, please. That'll be my next hit. So there you go. I wonder if that works. And if it does, probably don't tell anyone. If someone knows, like, a tax person, ask them for me. I want to know. But don't tell the regular scum, okay? I want this to be our secret. Because if it's our secret... Then we could just continue. Then we could do it, man. We could do this shit. Me and you could go on whatever fucking trips we want all day long. Done. Done and done. There you go. Is there any other, like, when I hate when people have, like, a baby on board sign on their car. Because I just feel like, well, what am I... Before, I was going to crash right into you, but now I'm not. But... I think I actually hate the just married thing even a little bit more. Because you're just like, what do you want from people on the highway? To be like, oh, that's great. Like, you're still driving. This person in this Jeep still looks like a real dick. And it's like, just married and some hearts on the back. But it's like, come on, you had the fucking wedding. Isn't that enough? Everyone you know had to come and pretend like they care about the fact that you're married. They're like, well, I'm going to exclusively have sex with one person. And all your friends are like, that's a great decision. That I'm very invested in that for you somehow. So here's a fucking Vitamix blender. But then you got to do it on the highway. You got to announce that on the highway. I'm going to behave differently towards you. I thought you were maybe just one of these fucking single losers, the kind that I, you know, cut off or sometimes even lightly nudge into the median or a ditch. But nope, turns out you're marriage material. I was wrong about you, my friend. I was wrong. I'm the first to admit when I was wrong, and I was wrong. I've been wrong. I've been down to the bottom of every bottle. Okay, that'll do, huh? Is that like a full show? I can't really look at the time very well while I drive. Yep, okay, that is a full show. And I stayed mostly on the road. So there you go, guys. Charles Hinton. We might catch some more books from him in the future. Dinosaur War, Skunk Woman. There was another one that looked vaguely racist. Not as racist as the time traveling racist, but he does seem to have a thing for black people. I will say that he doesn't have great opinions of them as a race. So that's something to keep in mind. Okay, guys. We'll see you next time.